funding for Think comes from SMU Master of Liberal Studies program.
You walk into a 10th high school reunion, pretty much everybody looks good. Still in their late 20s, people are almost universally spared any real evidence of the ravages of time. But at the 20th, the 30th, the 40th reunions, you start to see differences. Some people remain in great health while others are showing their years. But everybody in the room is the same age, so why do some people seem to get old faster than others? From KERA in Dallas, this is Think. I'm Chris Boyd. Elizabeth Blackburn received the 2009 Nobel Prize in Physiology for finding key answers to these age-old questions of human existence. The difference between the classmates who remain physically young for their ages and those who look older and feel worse is linked in part to the state of their telomeres, caps on the ends of DNA strands that protect our chromosomes from deterioration and damage, like the plastic tips that keep the end of our shoelaces from fraying. If we keep those telomeres in good shape, we can lengthen the span of our healthy lives. As a discoverer of telomeres and telomerase, the enzyme that builds them, Elizabeth Blackburn is the perfect person to tell us how to keep ours in good shape. Her new book, written with Alyssa Ipel, is called The Telomere Effect, The New Science of Living Younger. Elizabeth, welcome to Think.
Thank you.
How did you discover that telomeres have this function of protecting chromosomes from degrading?
Well, it began with lab studies, which was looking at, first of all, what was the DNA at the ends of chromosomes and finding out that it was an unusual kind of structure of DNA which could involve more or less numbers of little repeated elements of the DNA at the ends of all the chromosomes. And then when we discovered the enzyme telomerase that has the job of adding back some of the DNA at some rate when the DNA wears down, then we thought, what will happen to cells without telomerase? And so we looked in little tiny pond scum single-celled organisms to start with, but that's how a lot of basic research starts in organisms where you look for the fundamentals of what goes on in life in, you know, the quickest experimental system you can. And we took away telomerase and the telomeres wore down and the cells ceased to function and ceased to be able to replenish themselves. So then the big question was, over the many decades in our human lives, because of course, you know, we share all those things, the telomeres, the telomerase, what happens and does it matter for our human health?
And of course, it does matter, as you were later able to demonstrate. And telomeres or telomeres don't necessarily affect how long we live, but how long we have good health. Is that right?
Both, in fact, because really how long we have good health is a reflection of how long we don't have, you know, the most common diseases of aging, which also end up killing the majority of population in developed societies. And those, of course, are the, you know, the usual well-known suspects of cardiovascular, diabetes, cancers of many kinds. And, you know, added into that are the afflictions of neurodegenerative diseases such as dementias, Alzheimer's, and also lung conditions. So because we die of a lot of those, most commonly in aggregate, and because the risk of getting those statistically is related to how much wearing down of your telomeres there is, it does actually affect our lives in that way. But it's not a ticking clock, but it's a very statistical, now quite robust kind of predictor at a population and cohort level of things like mortality. So, for example, there's been some very big studies done in the US, and also I'll give an example of one in Scandinavia, where 64,000 people had their telomeres measured. It's just average telomeres in white blood cells, their immune system cells, and then waiting for an average of about 7 years and said, well, who died? And after correcting for all of the possible things that might have contributed to reason somebody died, it was clear that telomeres were one of the independent predictors of who died after about 7 years in a population way. And in fact, you know, it really was like a 50% more chance that somebody would die if the telomeres were shorter rather than longer. So at a 40,000-foot level, we can certainly see, and the comparable results came from a big Northern California study too. So that was 100,000 people. So yes, it is a statistical predictor, along with the many other mechanisms, of course, that go on in our complicated lives and our complicated aging biology.
So
it does predict it to some level.
Generally speaking, telomeres get shorter as we age, as part of the aging process, but we can add a bit of length to them at any given time?
Well, what happens in our bodies is it's a balance between a number of kinds of contributors to the wearing down of telomeres, and those are things as simple as how DNA molecules replicate, which is that they can't replicate to the ends and all the way. Our chromosomes can't do that. It's just inherently built in. And so telomerase has to make up for that, particularly in cells that have to keep dividing through our lives, like stem cells. But for some reason in humans, through our, you know, let's say 8 decades of life expectancy that we can expect in many, many, you know, societies when things are pretty okay, that balance between the addition and the loss, which is an enormously complex set of all sorts of inputs, genetic and a lot of not genetic, that balance tips towards the loss overall over time exceeding, on average, the gaining. But that rate can vary enormously, and that's what the last few decades of research in humans has started to relate very much to things that affect our health span, our number of years that we live before we start becoming prey to the kinds of diseases of aging that I was talking about.
Sometimes, Elizabeth, when we see several generations of a healthy-looking family together, we say, good genes. Is there anything in our DNA that makes certain individuals more or less likely to have longer telomeres for their age?
Absolutely. And that's been now very nicely documented in population studies where, to just back up for one moment. So a great deal of molecular and cell research has been going on, many labs throughout the years, understanding, you know, what's the molecular machinery, the molecules, all of the things that make telomeres maintained or not be maintained so well. So we know a lot of the molecules and we know the genes that encode them. So now you can say, okay, which genes are important for maintaining telomeres? And you find the ones that are dedicated to telomere maintenance. So we know this is really a very direct kind of effect. But they're very subtle effects in the population at large. What's really important are the things that are not genetic from the point of view of these are the things we can change. So there is some parental, some family influence. But it's and by the way, particularly for centenarians, people who live out to much longer than the population at large, there's a whole complex of genetic inputs. And I should say it hasn't been sorted out yet. There's a lot that goes into it. But keeping your telomeres good enough to get to that stage is looking like that's one component, but only one component. So there's partly genes, but what's so fascinating is that there's so much of the non-genetic aspects as well. But I do want to emphasize genes are important in one very important way. They tell you what kinds of things cause effects, because genes are very causal. Hmm. And when we see these variations in genes that we know are absolutely dedicated to telomere maintenance, that's what their job is. They live their whole lives just to do telomere maintenance. And we know that from a lot of studies in, you know, the lab, in cells, in animals, and people now, people's cells. Those genes are now shown to have real effects on how likely we are to get, for example, cardiovascular disease, even dementias, and certain risks for certain diabetes. So that's really telling us that they are contributing. But there are many other factors going on. And so the interesting thing, why we wrote the book, The Telomere Effect, why I wrote it with my co-author, Alyssa Apple, was because there were things that we can actually do in our lives that you can see material effects on telomere maintenance in certain kinds of things that one can do.
So we can chalk up another point in the very long column of health conditions that are improved by exercise. In fact, our telomeres are made longer when we exercise. Is there a particular kind of physical exertion that is known to be good for building telomere length?
Yes, the kind that is related to cardiovascular fitness mostly. Brisk walking even. It's interesting because what you're able to do in terms of assessing kinds of exercise would be to say, well, here's one kind of guideline you can use. Let's see, observationally and now in intervention-controlled studies, what kind of effect this kind of exercise might have on telomere maintenance. And so it gives us some real kind of criteria for what kind of exercise works. And what's fascinating is that even some works. And then at some point, it doesn't, you know, improve a whole lot. So you don't have to run a marathon a week or a marathon or do 3 hours a day in the gym. For example, I walk to work for 30 minutes and 30 minutes back because that kind of thing has a material effect on telomere maintenance in a lot of observational and now some of the intervention studies. Weight bearing by itself didn't itself have that much effect. But interestingly, when you cumulatively added up different kinds of exercise that a person did, not even a whole lot, you know, like some walking and maybe some, you know, vigorous and some weight bearing. And the more categories you added up, the longer, statistically speaking, were somebody's telomeres. So it's really good news in some ways because it says, as many other studies converge on the idea, a huge amount of exercise turned out not to be that important for cardiovascular fitness. And cardiovascular fitness seems to be kind of the name of the game that starts to tie into things we really care about as we age too, which is, of course, cognitive function remaining as good as possible. So the telomere part of it is giving us some kind of quantifiable criterion.
How long do those benefits last? So if somebody was an athlete, say, in high school or college, but have been couch potatoes ever since, is that a benefit of longer telomeres going to persist?
I don't know if that exact study has been done, but there are studies where you can look at effects and see over some periods of months that you see a measurable effect on the capacity to maintain telomeres. Now, the kind of history that you're talking about has actually been done with things like looking at what somebody's, whether they'd had the opportunity to finish high school or go to college and so on, and even after correcting for many things, what was their telomere maintenance like in later life? And even after you correct for all sorts of things things like household income and the kind of job and health behaviors and health, you know, measures, the education that you got, having the opportunity to finish high school in two big studies, one in the US, one in the UK, and other studies, that related to having longer telomeres in later life. Now, I'm going to tie this back to exercise in an interesting way, which is that there are studies that show somewhat paradoxically that people's cognitive performance in high school is related to their exercise ability, which is a little bit against the myth of the jock.
So in other words, yeah, if you're working out, your brain is also, I guess, benefiting from all that exercise.
That's right. And those studies have been specially marked in older adults. But it's interesting that I think all these kinds of things that relate to health, more and more we're recognizing that what we think of diseases of aging are really things that are having cumulative effects over the life course, and even things in high school. And the other direction, very adverse effects of very adverse things happening in childhood, they actually quantifiably reverberate into later life in the terms of quantifiable, you know, degrees of telomere shortness. So I think it's a life course story.
My guest is Nobel laureate Elizabeth Blackburn. We're talking about her new book, The Telomere Effect, The New Science of Living Younger. You can join our conversation at 1-800-933-5372. We'll be back in 2 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Funding for Think comes from the SMU Master of Liberal Studies program, a customizable evening master's program for working professionals. You can apply now for the summer of 2017. More at smu.edu/MLS.
This is Think. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest this hour is Elizabeth Blackburn, who received the 2009 Nobel Prize in Physiology for the discovery of telomeres and their effect on the aging process. Her new book is called The Telomere Effect, The New Science of Living Younger. You can join our conversation at 1-800-933-5372 or find us on Twitter at KERATHINK. Elizabeth, what sorts of clues can we get to the state of our telomeres from, say, how old we look? Do wrinkled skin and gray hair signal that something else might be awry?
It is to some extent a somewhat weak predictor, statistically speaking. What's happening to our telomeres is the cumulative effects of a great many different things. And of course, in some ways, the most important things, you know, much as we want to look look glowing and healthful on the outside. But what's really important is how we're aging, you know, inside and throughout our bodies and through all the cells of our bodies. And so the outside looks are a bit of an indicator, but it's perhaps not the most, you know, the most important one. But yes, our skin cells underneath the skin cells are cells that are affected by, you know, aging processes, which include, among other things, the wearing down of the telomeres, which then in turn affects their ability to replenish the layers of skin, you know, in the most robust kind of way.
What is the role of sleep in maintaining those telomeres?
Well, as you might imagine, it's salutary. And so the studies are observational at this stage, but in enough studies that it's, you know, again, we know in terms of health, there's clear indications that sleep is helpful. And sure enough, the sort of cut points, if you will, were that if we saw 7 or more hours of sleep were, you know, clearly associated with better, more robust telomere maintenance, and 5 hours less or less than 5 hours, that's where you could really see a real difference. And so quality of sleep, as self-reported, which after all is what the person is experiencing, and that is something that keeps getting reflected in telomere measures, the actual experience of the person, the quality of the sleep that they themselves describe, that turned out to be related to telomere maintenance. And so it's not just, you know, going to bed and lying awake and calling that sleep, but really having real sleep, which from a lot of neuroscience studies, it's very clear that there's patterns of sleep throughout the night, that it's important for optimal both brain function and help. So again, it was a useful guideline to know that those kinds of time frames, you know, less than 5 hours, more than 7 hours, those are useful kind of things to keep in mind. So in the book, what we talk about is what's been learned about from many studies. And my co-author, Alyssa Eppel, is a psychologist who studies the effects of chronic severe stress and states of mind on physiological aspects of us and metabolic aspects. And so a lot of science is being learned about behaviors and how people motivate themselves to do things like, you know, if you know you're not sleeping well, what are the useful things that you can bring science of behaviors and sleep into that to bear on that and say, how can we deal with that? So we put a lot of practical information in the book because there's a lot of good information that comes in from behavioral and psychological sciences about how to make things change in your lives in a way that'll actually stick.
I was interested to read that certainly quantity matters of sleep, but regular sleep habits seem to be really helpful to people as well.
Well, that apparently from, you know, the very extensive world of sleep research, that apparently is the idea that you get yourself into that kind of mode in which then the likelihood of having the kind of good quality sleep goes up.
Okay, so we hear all the time how important it is to eat a healthy diet, but it seems that no two people agree on what that means exactly. What kinds of eating habits might be good for our telomeres?
Well, again, that was something where you could take quantitative studies and look at all the information you can get from, you know, studies in actually in, you know, groups of people around the world and cohorts of people, and often it's asking them what they eat. And that can be somewhat unreliable. But what was so fascinating was that when you look at the statistical relationships to telomere maintenance, telomere length as measured in white blood cells of people, you see really quantitative relationships. And you know, telomeres don't lie. And so so it's a great objective measure for looking at it. And the patterns that emerged were really quite useful to know because, again, it's a criterion you can use. And it was the kind of food that, from a lot of other studies, we know is healthy from various criteria. And of course, it's, you know, things like what we call a Mediterranean diet, but there's different versions all over the world of that. But it tends to be more heavy on the sort of plant-related high, you know, high fiber and not so refined flours and not too much refined sugars. Interestingly, lower on red processed meats, which the WHO reported in the last couple of years is a risk factor for cancers. And particularly we found relationships between intake of refined sugars. And one of the very striking ways of taking in refined sugars is to drink sugared sodas because the sugar goes very quickly into the bloodstream, has metabolic effects, which are the ones that, when repeated, put one into metabolic syndrome risk. So the telomeres basically said kind of things that we knew from other things, generally about food categories. It was interesting that some of the studies have been focusing on omega-3 fatty acids because there's such good literature on that, relating it, for example, to cardiovascular risks. And so looking at omega-3 fatty acid relationship to telomere maintenance, you see very real relationships there in a dose-dependent way. So, what we've known from other kinds of criteria about omega-3 fatty acids is, yes, it's good to have it at least dietarily or, if not possible, you know, through some kind of supplement form even.
What about alcohol? We're told that small amounts of red wine on a regular basis may be good for our hearts. Does drinking affect telomere length?
The robust data are related to if it's about an average of 4 drinks or more per day on average, that we can really see a substantial effect on telomere maintenance. The small subtle effects were not so obvious statistically, but 4 drinks a day, I'd say, you know, if you're going to use telomere maintenance is an objective measure, a readout, kind of criterion that is pushing it over the limits.
So but 4 drinks is shortening those telomeres.
Oh yes,
yeah, okay.
Yes.
Okay.
Sorry. Showing attrition on them, mm-hmm. but we, the data on telomeres don't really speak to the statistically to the more subtle kinds of is a 1 drink a day versus none good, right? It's really if there's drinking four or more a day for telomere maintenance is not good for telomere maintenance.
There are some interesting effects observed with regard to body mass index and yo-yo dieting. Talk a little bit about weight maintenance.
Well, as you know, this is a complex thing because obesity, as we know, is on the rise. Not 100% of obesity is associated with the metabolic syndrome, which is the real issue, which is the balance of glucose and insulin usage and how that all plays out in the body, which when it's, you know, not regulated properly, leads into diabetes, which is the real problem. And so what was interesting was to kind of see that complexity perhaps played out a little bit in the criterion of looking at telomere maintenance. And what was quite clear was that the kinds of more refined looking at things like the ratio of waist to hip, which is a relationship of, you know, your belly fat versus your, you know, buttocks or thigh fat, right? And that is, in a lot of studies, belly fat is really, really a problem. And waist to hip ratio is a better relationship to look at with regard to telomere maintenance. So obesity is overall a very crude, you know, starting indicator, but there's much more sort of informative ways now of looking at that and seeing what's the dangerous kind that is associated with metabolic syndrome. So being, which is in turn being, the problem.
Yeah,
that's the diabetes risk.
Being apple-shaped may pose more risks than being somewhat pear-shaped. Is that it?
That's the simple criterion, yes. Yeah.
All right, let's go to the phones now at 1-800-933-5372. We have Aaron calling from Bedford. Hi, Aaron.
Hi, I'm an avid listener. Great show.
Thank you.
My question today is, I'm a kinesiology minor, is biology, and there's three human body types, endomorph, ectomorph, mesomorph, and with that, commonality of sleep, rest, diet, and exercise. When it comes to sleep, is there a synchronous action between rest and cellular division? And I'll take my answer off the phone.
Thanks for your call.
What a wonderful question. And I don't know the answer. What a wonderful question. This is what's so great, because, you know, there's just so many things we don't know about what goes on in our bodies. And that particular one, I don't know how that works out.
Is there a point in our lives where, like, are we building up telomere length until we hit 30 or 25 or 50 or whatever, and then we start to see a decline on average if all other factors are equal?
You know, a big surprise in about 1998 with some colleagues in California, I was involved in a study where they looked at telomeres and starting from babies. And in fact, there's a big loss of telomere length from birth to kindergarten.
Wow.
So this is something that's happening throughout our lives and really harks back to this point that it's our long-term risks of diseases are put in play by all sorts of factors that play in, even prenatally, of which telomere maintenance is one. But there have been long-term studies that have related prenatal bad conditions of the mom's pregnancy to later risks of things like hypertension and diabetes in the children, you know, who then grew up. And so I think the real important thing is to think of it as a life course. And we've seen in studies, we meaning, you know, the field, not our personal work, but a lot of studies, are starting to look in children now and seeing that really adverse things like the degree of exposure to violence, I mean, you know, and, you know, quite terrible traumatic things such as loss of a parent and other very adverse sorts of things in child's lives, they get related to both telomere shortness and the rate of shortening that you can see over time, even in children. And so to some degree, that's going to be not necessarily correctable in adulthood. And that's what we don't know, is to what extent there's malleability. We can see quite a lot of malleability in telomere maintenance, but the big open question is, in the long run, you know, can we really get things improved when there's been some quite drastic things that have happened earlier on in life? That's an open question, but one I think is very important, you know, for us societally to start thinking about through this particular lens. There's lots of other reasons for thinking about these questions, but this is one that, just because of the research, just really starts coming up in my mind.
This is Think. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest this hour is Nobel laureate Elizabeth Blackburn. We're talking about her new book, The Telomere Effect, The New Science of Living Younger. If you'd like to join our conversation, you can call 1-800-933-5372 or email think@kera.org. Elizabeth, somebody out there might be listening and thinking, well, now I know that telomeres are important, and I know that they're made of telomerase, and so I'm going to hope that somebody comes up with a pill, and I'll just take a telomerase pill every day, and I'll be young forever. But there's a catch there. Can you talk about that?
There is indeed. It's a great temptation to do a quick fix. But, you know, we are very, very, very complex creatures, and we live for very long periods of time where small things happening over years imperceptibly can really lead to big risks of diseases like cancers. And so here's the fascinating thing. It's really the balance of telomere maintenance being regulated properly throughout our body that ends up being important. And the reason is that I've told you, we talked a little earlier in the program about how maintaining the telomeres is important because otherwise cells can't replenish as they should. But guess what cells we don't want to replenish? Mm. And those are cancer cells. And it emerged a few decades ago that human cancer cells just love to ramp up their telomerase because they're on a tear. The cancer cells have had all sorts of changes, genetic and otherwise, that now are making them run effectively out of control. But to do that, they need to also keep their telomeres topped up. And so they ramp up methods of maintaining the telomeres, and the most common one is to ramp up telomerase. So in normal cells, though, overall, it's better to maintain telomeres. But then the studies in the last few years looking at risk factors of a few nasty kinds of cancers, not the most common, but ones that are very challenging clinically, and those are melanomas, brain cancers called gliomas as a group, and non-smoking lung cancers. Those ones, you actually have a genetic disposition toward them. It's mild but real if you have the natural variants of genes that actually nudge your telomerase and telomere maintenance higher. So, whoops, now we've got a Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde here, right? So all of the things that we talk about in the book, which are sort of physiological interventions like exercise, like eating, reasonable balanced diet, sleep, and very importantly, frames of mind that are conducive to much better physiological readouts, such as the opposite of severe chronic psychological stress. All of those things have never been shown to have any cancer risks or cardiovascular risks or any kinds of diabetes or any other risks. So in the current state of knowledge, we do better to stick with what we know because we just don't understand enough about if you try and selectively push telomerase up, in what cell types and at what times and in what time frames it will tip over into increasing cancer risks. And cancers take years to develop, so we may not know it for years.
My guest is Nobel laureate Elizabeth Blackburn. We're talking to her about her new book, The Telomere Effect, The New Science of Living Younger. We'll talk more about the role of frames of mind after this break. And if you'd like to join the conversation in the meantime, you can call in to 1-800-933-5372. You can email think@kera.org or find us on Twitter. We're @KERAThink.
Funding for Think comes from the SMU Doctor of Liberal Studies program, where students can customize their degree, like Diane Jay, internationally published creative writer. More at smu.edu/DLS.
You're listening to Think. I'm Chris Boyd, and my guest this hour is Elizabeth Blackburn, who received the Nobel Prize in Physiology in 2009 for the discovery of telomeres and their effect on the aging process. Her new book is called The Telomere Effect, The New Science of Living Younger. You can join us at 1-800-933-5372. Elizabeth, were you surprised to discover the link between a positive mental outlook and longer telomeres?
Well, I wasn't surprised, but I was glad to see it. And that was because the studies that we and then many others had been doing had been relating telomere maintenance to the other direction, the situation of having very stressful situations which induce stress responses over time in people that fed into physiology that ultimately, wore down their telomeres faster. And so then the question was, well, can you now go in the other direction? And so some small intervention studies have been done that indicate the telomere maintenance capacity does improve with certain kinds of interventions that involve things that are becoming more and more well understood, which is, when we have a threat response over and over and over again, which is a good thing to have in an emergency, but not a good thing to have over and over again in situations where one feels one can't cope, then there are ways of retraining one's brain, if you will, or retraining one's responses, which can be surprisingly effective. Some of them involve things that, sound a little foreign to us, like things like meditation or mindfulness. But it turns out that there's a lot of useful practices. I just want to tell you that my co-author is Alyssa Apple, and she's actually, if people are interested in that, she's actually going to be in Dallas with Jon Kabat-Zimm, and there's a KER website link for an event coming up soon, which will inform more about these aspects.
Oh, great. Thank you. Let's go to the phones now at 1-800-933-5372. I think that John in Dallas wants to ask a little bit more about meditation. Hi, John.
Hi, Chris, and hello, Dr. Blackburn.
Good morning or good afternoon, depending on where we are.
I'm in Dallas. Okay. My question is this. I started meditation years ago after reading Dr. Herbert Benson's research at Harvard Medical Labs on meditation. And he's written books and stuff, and he claims that people who meditate can have longer telomeres than people who don't. He says it can preserve the length of the telomeres. I was just wondering, are you familiar with Dr. Herbert Benson?
Not personally, not the individual studies, but there are a number of small studies existing which have tried to look and see what kind of extent of effects it has, maintenance of telomeres. And indeed, we are finding in recent studies with, particularly now trying to build in control groups and trying to really sort out the effect of meditation versus a lot of other potential variants. And indeed, yes, there are effects on telomere maintenance one can see. And because so much has been studied about meditation and its, quite salutary effects in all sorts of ways, this again doesn't sort of surprise me. It doesn't contradict current information. So I think a lot of people are interested in, what kind and how long and so forth. And again, using telomere maintenance or capacity for maintenance of telomeres as one criterion is a useful way of assessing whether a practice can be useful or not from that particular standpoint. So I'm very glad to hear that you're doing this because, I learned to meditate when some of our research studies were including groups that were using meditation as a part of an intervention. And I learned to meditate in a very intensive few days, but I found that what I'd learned was something that I could carry into daily practice and, just do what I like to call little micro meditations, sort of put yourself into that frame of mind. And it very much involves kind of focusing attention. But it's very helpful for a lot of things, including even, I find, my work, focusing better on my work. So, we people who study these things extensively have found ways that people can incorporate these quite useful practices. Although there's very intensive meditation studies, which are not, or practices which are not all that, possible in many people's busy lives, but there are also other things that can help. And the telomere work, I find it so interesting because you keep finding all sorts of ways where something not too drastic does make a difference and it all adds up. So, the idea of going to one extreme form of exercise or an extreme diet or an extreme this or that, it seems as if from the telomere maintenance side of point of view of things, you can do well by just sort of adding in small changes as realistic. The real thing seems to be changes that you can actually do over the long term, which might mean smaller tweaks rather than drastic changes realistically.
We've talked a lot today about the effect of how we live. How much does it matter where we live?
Yes, well, you know, coming from a very different kind of research, people, you know, really are finding the zip code is quite a significant predictor of the outcomes for various, or, you know, how healthy you're going to be by various criteria. And so the social environment, which, of course, you know, in one way our zip code will reflect, that turns out to be something that, you know, not surprisingly, is really important for humans. And we can see various measures of that reflected in telomere maintenance in studies and cohorts looking at neighborhood quality, looking at levels of things like neighborhood trust and so forth. Things that you might think would be somewhat intangible and hard to get your arms around. And yet we see these quantifiably related to degrees of telomere shortness, you know, even when one corrects for the kinds of factors that you might have thought might have been, you know, the real reason that the telomeres were being affected. And so when you correct for these things, you still see effects on things like, you know, levels of neighborhood trust, very interestingly, experienced discrimination, very interestingly, things like that that really start getting to, you know, how we all relate to each other.
All right, let's go back to the phones now. 1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. We have Patty calling from Austin. Hi, Patty.
Hi. I have a question about the length of telomeres in different tissues and organs of the body and how much variability there is and whether that is a predictor for aging or disease states in different body systems.
Yes, marvelous question. So the answer, the short answer is that overall, there's a general correlation. If your telomeres are short in your blood cells, they'll be generally short in your skin cells, for example. But then, of course, you know, cell and molecular biologists, you know, we love diving in and looking at all the details and so on, and telomeres are affected by so many things and they play out differently. You know, hormones are affected by different enzymes, different factors in the blood, all sorts of things. And different cells respond differently. So not surprisingly, there are cell type specific differences. Now, if we had infinite time and infinite money, we'd look at every telomere in every cell in our body and every, right? but that dream is not yet technically possible. But what you can do is take a blood draw, or even a saliva draw, but a blood draw is good, and take a look at a kind of snapshot or multiple snapshots, like a video over time, if you will, of how on average your telomeres are being maintained in your immune system, which is kind of a good lens into your body. And those are where these kinds of statistical relationships, where telomere shortness actually predicts the likelihood of getting some of the major diseases of aging, you can see these correlations quite good. And then you could say, well, would it be better if I used certain cell types? And there were certain things, like there's a specific subclass of T lymphocytes, if you like. These are cells of the immune system that fight off, you know, pathogens and diseases, and also help fight off cancers, by the way. And certain of those we see very clearly related to certain kinds of stressful situations or stressful responses. But in practice, it's often just cheaper to just look at a handful, if you will, of our immune cells and look at the average. And surprisingly, you get a lot of information out that way. And because you can do the studies in lots of people that way, you now get very good statistical, robust kinds of answers. But, you know, at the molecular detailed level, you know, we'd love to know what is the most important pathway, or is it a real network of pathways that ultimately are playing out in whether those telomeres will be maintained well enough to avoid disaster or not?
You're listening to Think. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest this hour is Elizabeth Blackburn, Nobel laureate and author of The Telomere Effect, The New Science of Living Younger. Let's go back to the phones now. We have Kippy on the line in Navasota. Hi, Kippy.
Hi, how are you?
Very well, thanks.
Okay, I have two adopted children, two birth children. My question to the doctor is it possible that the stress caused by a mother who has decided she has to give her fetus up or child up for adoption, that the stress caused by her tension and upset can have a long-term effect on the psychological and physical makeup of the child later in life, perhaps related to the telomeres.
Yes, that's it's a wonderful question. I will say it's well beyond something that I can give you a clear answer to, because nobody has actually looked. In some ways, we are resilient, and a lot of what I think is very important is that there are ways that we can bounce back, and especially if we are aware that things are going on that would affect telomeres, and this might be one sort of thing, then we can say, well, you know, it's important to make sure that there's, you know, the support and the love and the things that actually make people resilient, which in turn we can see relationships to from about resilience and telomere maintenance. So I don't know the exact answer to the situation you're talking about, which is a very, you know, very important one to think about, but to say there is a lot of resilience as well. When we look statistically at the effects of chronic stress, we look in a statistical way. It's a probability. It's not a crystal ball that any one person will be that way, but it's a chance. It's you know, it makes a higher chance that there might be adverse effects. But we found in mothers who were caregivers, primary caregiver for a chronically ill child, her child, that while the number of years that she had been in this situation did statistically relate to telomere shortness, there was another counter effect, and that was her resilience to the situation, her ability to handle it in various ways, and that related to longer telomeres. So it's this mix of knowing where certain situations can lead to a risk of having worse maintenance, but also on the other hand, sort of knowing that there's a lot of empowerment in how one can, you know, with resilience of various kinds, can find that those effects are counteracted. And even adding in certain things like, you know, amazingly in very chronically stressed women, we found that if they did, you know, even 10, 15 minutes of it, just brisk kind of exercise a day, that buffered the effect of the chronic stress on telomere maintenance. So in other words, you know, if they were sedentary versus just having a bit of exercise habit, it really helped to do that. So that's what we try and point out in the book, that there's things one can do.
Do you foresee a future where a routine checkup includes a gauge of how long our telomeres are for our age?
You know, for individuals, it's a very statistical kind of thing. That it really only means something when you look in a lot of people. You know, I'm going to make a parallel here, like smoking. Now, if you smoke, that doesn't mean you're going to get lung cancer. That doesn't mean you're not going to get lung cancer if you don't smoke. It just says the chances get shifted. So, you know, we don't do a lung biopsy to say don't smoke. We say, look, studies in populations have shown that the risk goes up the more you smoke. And so as an individual, you know, one gains that knowledge from looking at us and saying the probability as a whole and saying, look, our probability of these diseases, including lung cancers, goes up with smoking. So I think the answer is perhaps when it's combined with other things, telomere length by itself being not so useful in combination, perhaps it will be useful.
Elizabeth Blackburn received the 2009 Nobel Prize in Physiology. Her new book, written with Elissa Epel, is called The Telomere Effect, The New Science of Living Younger. Elizabeth, it's been a really interesting hour. Thank you for making time for us.
Thank you so much.
Think is produced by Stephen Becker. Shelley Canavy is technical director. Samantha Guzman is associate producer. And Jeff Whittington is executive producer. Subscribe to our podcast at think.kera.org. I'm Chris Boyd. Thanks for listening.